Hi there. Welcome to another episode of But Seriously, the Cancer Podcast. My name is Bert Scholl. I'm a two-time cancer survivor, a cancer survivorship guide and mentor, and the creator and host of But Seriously, the Cancer Podcast. Brought to you in part by the Cancer Resource Center of the Finger Lakes, right here in Ithaca, New York. Learn more at crcfl.net, because no one should face cancer alone. To learn more about this show and my services, please go to bertscholl.com. That's bertscholl.com. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at But Seriously the Cancer Podcast, and on Twitter at But Seriously TCP, and check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/ But Seriously the Cancer Podcast. And thank you so much for all you do. Hi, Tara.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Great to finally meet you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for being on the show. We met through, who did we meet? Through my friend, our friend Larry, right?
Exactly.
He connected us on social media quite a while ago. He was like, you two need to meet.
Yes. And it took us a while to have this conversation, but I'm so glad we're doing it now.
Yeah, me too. Me too. He was super inspired by you. I think he's just blown away by who you are in the face of your circumstances. And I've been really lit up by you and what you bring to the community that you speak to and the one that you support on your page. And it's just, you constantly bring excitement, passion, raw honesty, and an aspect of playfulness to community. And I just love that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, social media has been a great form of expression for me. It's been very cathartic just to express whatever is going on. It's very helpful and healing for me to share it and be heard.
Yeah, I love what you bring. And so I guess what comes to mind right now is my curiosity. Like, I'd love for you to tell people why, aside from, you know, the cathartic benefits, like, what is your intention? Like, what's your work? What do you bring? Like, what do you love about this conversation that has you be so consistent and passionate?
That is a wonderful question. I think it's very inspiring for us cancer thrivers. I call us thrivers rather than survivors, because thriver has such an empowered term to it, to get together and chat, because cancer can be such a journey full of fear. There's so much fear around cancer in our society because we're in a death phobic society and cancer equates death. So I think it's really important to help inspire others on a journey to know that cancer can be a great opportunity to really transform oneself and grow. And it can be a beautiful experience. I'm not saying it's easy by any means. And I know you know that as well as many of our listeners, but it can be a beautiful opportunity of profound transformation. So that's why I love having these conversations.
Beautifully. Yeah, it can be. And it, you know, has been for me and for many people I've spoken to. It brings your attention to that which matters to you most. And we get real clear real fast for some of us. And then, you know, I try to remind people, tell people, is that it's not some change that happens. It's a direction. It's an intention. And where there's just constant growth and development as well, you know. And you said, yeah, it's like you said, death phobic, like Stephen Jenkinson. I don't know if you know about him, but he says, you know, our culture is grief illiterate. And I love that phrase.
That's exactly it. I love him. I've actually had a chance to host him before many years ago, and he stayed at my place. I owned a horse retreat center in Northern California, and he stayed there, and we hosted him for this whole evening he did. So he's so amazing. I love his books and all the work he does.
Yeah, me too. I've listened to one of his books. Now I'm on to a second one. A friend of mine's been a student of his and gone up to Canada, right? And like done these year-long workshops, not year-long, right? A series of weekends throughout the year. Yeah, he's really wonderful. And he doesn't, doesn't pull any punches. That man is, he is as direct as a person can be and unwavering in his commitment. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's true. He's very raw and real.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be a bit intense at times. I mean, my commitment early on was to transform the cultural conversation about cancer because it's so fear-based. And I was dripping in fear for the first few weeks, maybe the first month when I was diagnosed. And then out of nowhere, just like fell out of the sky and landed in my mind. And I thought, this is a gift. This is an opportunity. Whether I live or die, that's irrelevant. But right now, I have the opportunity to be with this experience and to live fully and to be the fullest expression of me. And people say, well, what does that mean, right? And I'm like, well, it means no more hiding. No more hiding my love, no more hiding my shame, no more hiding my embarrassment, no more hiding my tenderness in my heart, you know, that I learned in this culture to do all that. And it's a trajectory, it's a direction, you know, it's not a switch didn't flip and all of a sudden I became a different person, but it just shifted dramatically after about a month. And then it's like when you sail and you're tacking because you're sailing into the wind, so you can't use the wind, you have to use the wind, you have to go back and forth, left and right, you know, side to side. And so the wind can, that way you can go into the wind. It's rather fascinating. And I feel like that's what it is in life, is we find our way. We're not going in a straight line. We're all over the road.
Yes. So well said. Great metaphor. And it's such a path of surrender. Like, okay, this is not what I chose, but here we are. So how can I release my fear into that wind and ride the waves and see the beauty and just be a part of it all?
Yeah, path of surrender. Yeah. To ride the waves, to not hold tight. I was in a training program before I got diagnosed, and my coach, who became a friend, and she is like, I wouldn't let go. She's like, Bert, you're in a river and it's rushing and you're hanging on to the root and the water's just hitting you in the face. She's like, let go. You're trying to not let go. And I was like, wow, that doesn't, you know, drop me to my knees. And thank heavens for it. You know, it became a big part of my process in navigating cancer.
I love that.
Thank you. I always remembered that. You know, it's beautiful.
And I'm just curious. So you said you released into that a month into your diagnosis. What was it that helped you find that sense of surrender a month into it? Because that's actually, it can be relatively early for a lot of people.
Yeah, I felt pretty lucky. What was it? My initial thought is like, I really don't know. I will say that, however, in November of 2000, I got trained in how to notice my blind spots as a person, areas where I don't see how I'm interacting with others and where I can be responsible for my part in the relationship. And so I had a lot of training in that. And then I, you know, in this course, I told you that my friend was a coach that told me to let go of the root and let the water take me. That was like a 6-month boot camp of like, we are just going to like dig to the bottom of your mind, you know, never can, right? Really, but just like, you know, get down to some of the core parts of you that keep you from being who you want to be in the world. And so with all that training, I was then after about a month, be like, wait a second. One of the things they teach is like, choose what you have right now. Because we don't like what we have right now, then we argue with life. Like, I don't want this life. It's like, well, it's what you got. So if you actually get that's where you're at and you can't change it, then you can actually start making a difference. And for me, I was like, okay, this is what I have. I have cancer. You know, after it was just like, you know, the days of waking up each morning, being like, oh my gosh, like I have cancer, you know, crying. It's like, wait, this is what I have. And if I have it, I'm going to live while I'm alive because I might not be alive very long.
So love it.
I think that's where it came from.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. It can be such a wake up call for people. Oh, I'm not going to live till I'm 80 years old. It's this might be it. So let's live life now.
Yeah. And grieve, right? And living life includes, like, you know, all the grief that comes with what your future may hold and all the unknown and that great stuff.
Absolutely. Everything.
Yeah. So you said to me just a moment ago, we don't know if we're going to live. And you got some pretty shocking news when you're first diagnosed, right?
Yes, I was first diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer in September of 2016. So yes, that was definitely shocking. There's been lots of shocking moments throughout my journey. Deeper wake-up call, you might say.
Yeah. And how did you find out you had breast cancer?
Well, my story is that my best friend was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, which is the most aggressive form of blood cancer. And she was quite young. She was 44. And I was very fortunate to be able to spend a lot of time with her from her diagnosis to her death, which was 22 months. And I gave a lot. I don't regret it at all. It was so beautiful and tragic at the same time. But I ended up depleting myself quite a bit. Like, it was very hard emotionally, but also physically, because at one point I was living 3 hours away. So I was pushing myself quite a bit, and I wasn't tending to myself the same way I might have if I wasn't giving to her. And I ignored the fact that there was a lump in my breast because I was so focused on her. And then when she died, the grief was overwhelming. And it was almost exactly 1 year to the date when she died that I discovered I had stage 3 breast cancer. Basically, the lump in my left breast became more prominent to the point of, oh, Tara, you can't ignore this. There is something there. And it took a few months to get it checked out. And then, yeah, that's when I had my diagnosis.
How quickly from, like, diagnosis to treatment did it become?
Well, so I was diagnosed in September 2016, and the route of treatment they wanted me to do was a standard route, which was chemo, surgery, radiation. I had a lot of trauma after being with my best friend, Deb, and because I spent months and months and months with her at the hospital, and I was petrified to do chemo, surgery, radiation, and I refused all standard treatment. I ended up doing all exclusive natural treatment for 2.5 years. I was doing very well. I mean, it was a full-time routine. It was very expensive. I had many fundraisers during that time. It was a lot to handle until a very stressful incident occurred in my life, and I realized I had to sell my horse retreat center. I did equine facilitated learning and workshops with people, therapeutic work with humans with horses. And I realized I had to sell my ranch and give up my work and everything I worked so hard for. And it was about a year of intense stress. And during that time, the cancer spread from my left breast to my lungs, my liver, my spine, my adrenal glands. And my story in a nutshell is that I ended up moving back home to Kauai, Hawaii, which is where my father is from. And I got here in Kauai in the winter of 2019, and I was literally dying. I was referred to hospice. I had so much cancer in my lungs. I could not hold a conversation. I was coughing so much. I could not lay down to sleep for 2 months because I was gagging in my sleep. And I started walking with a cane because my left hip was breaking. So luckily here in Kauai, there's a lot of the aloha spirit, the spirit of Hawaii, very kind and gentle and generous and loving. And the practitioners I talked to, they said, Tara, you're dying, so you have a chance. You can do chemo. I know you don't want to, but it just might save your life. So I had to face an incredible amount of fears and trauma around my best friend Deb's death. And I decided I wanted to live, and I did 9 months of chemo. It was very hard during that time. I almost died a few times. I landed in the hospital. I broke my left hip from bone metastasis and had to have emergency double hip surgery, and I needed to learn to walk again. And I ended up finishing treatment in February of 2020 with amazing results, with the cancer that had shrunk all throughout my body. And that's been over 2 years now. And I continue to have amazing scan results where the tumors continue to shrink. And I have the blood of a healthy, normal person.
Mm. Wow. Like, it just stopped me when you said you had to sell your ranch.
Yeah, that was hard.
Yeah, I bet that's an understatement. Hard. You get diagnosed and then have to sell your, just like I can just feel. And from all your posting and things, that's, you know, that's where your heart is, and with your animals. And to anytime a diagnosis leads a person to choose to give up, let go. I don't know if give up's the word. Let go of something that is so a part of their spirit. It's that in itself, you know, is changes the trajectory of one of one's life.
So Ooh. True. Yeah, I talk about that in my book, Grace, Grit, and Gratitude: A Cancer Thriver's Journey from Hospice to Full Recovery with the Healing Power of Horses. About, I equate it with the 5,000-year-old Mesopotamian goddess Inanna. It's very symbolic for those of us on a cancer journey. I'll tell you it in short, where she has to go down 7 layers to the depths of the underworld. And actually, the story of Persephone comes from the story of Inanna. But each layer she goes down, she needs to let go of something that's precious to her. You know, her regalia, her crown, her breastplate, whatever it may be. And it's such a great metaphor for those of us on a cancer journey, because, you know, us women, we give up our hair. Well, men too, but usually that's a bigger deal for women. You know, mm-hmm. body parts, let go of jobs, careers, you know, whatever it may be. It's such a sacrifice, and it can be so scary to go through that. But there's a whole idea of, like, you give up what doesn't serve you in order to be born again. So I always like to think of that when I'm going through difficult times, like, okay, it's a death and it's a rebirth.
Yeah, it's very Plutonian, you know, Pluto represents, you know, the death and rebirth. And yeah, like the phoenix rising from the ashes, right? Or a plant growing outside. It's beautiful, it's lush, especially in this part of the country where I live in New York State. Cold weather comes, the sun is up fewer hours, the plant dies, dries up, the seeds fall to the ground, and come springtime, it's the rebirth. So there is a death, but it's not death of, you know, for us, you know, the death of certain aspects of ourself that then allow us to grow into who we aspire to be or not.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a beautiful metaphor. Yeah. I think it's so important to have these stories and myths to hold on to, because it's intense to be alive.
Yeah.
These myths can be great structures for which we can base our reality when we're going through difficult times.
They're there for us to know that we're not alone, provide us some connection to this crazy thing called life. And I've never heard of Inanna before. I know,
okay.
Persephone as her, the underworld, her part, you know, what, 6 months under and 6 months above, something like that.
right. Yep. She came from Inanna. It's the oldest story, basically. And there's so many other goddesses based on her as well. So it's pretty fascinating. I talk about her a lot in my book, and I put pictures of her in there.
Beautiful. Now, is your book an audiobook as well? Yes, you just told me before we got on that you recorded your audiobook.
Yes, I have recorded it, but I am in the process of editing it, which might take a while. But I did record it in January. There's been a lot going on with my family, so it's one of the things on the list to do.
Yeah, and I will be buying it, because I tell my guests to write books, and like, if you have an audiobook, I'll listen to it. If it's a written book, it would only be fair of me to be honest and say I probably won't read it, because I don't really read.
Right.
And you know, I my hope is that each guest doesn't take it personally. They're like it ain't you. It's just, I just don't do it. At the end of the day, I'm like, another day I haven't read. Like, in where are we? We're in 2022. So like maybe 2015, I discovered an app. It was Overdrive. Then I hopped over to the company's different app called Libby, where I borrow audiobooks from the library. And I went from reading maybe, I don't know, probably less than one book a year, if you averaged it out, maybe one book a year, to reading like, I'm probably close to 200 books that I've listened to in the last 7 years. I mean, and that's everything from, you know, fiction to the, some of the classics and contemporary authors and to, you know, biographies and autobiographies and just everything under the sun, you know. And it's so wonderful to change my life because to sit down and read, for me, it's like, are my hands in the dirt right now? No, they're not. Okay, can they be?
Right.
They don't turn pages of books very well. And then I'm, you know, just so wonderful. I'm excited about your book, Grace, Grit, and Gratitude.
And thank you.
It's wonderful watching you post about it as you were getting so excited to complete the writing of it and the publishing of it. What a huge feat. I've many times more in the past thought, you know, how will I write my book? And I honestly look at it like, you know, that is either just going to happen. It's just going to fall into place and I'm going to begin it naturally, or it won't. You know, my podcast, this show, I love doing this. It's fantastic. I'm a contribution to the community. I am committed to transforming the cultural conversation about cancer. I know that this also just transforms, gives people the opportunity to transform their relationship to when life brings you your hardest struggle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
These folks in my life who haven't had cancer will listen to this show because I find out, because they're like, yeah, because you're talking about, like, we all have profound struggle in life, you know? And for some folks, they're just like, yeah, Bert, I love you, but I can't listen to people talk about having cancer. I'm like, I get it. I was the same way before I was diagnosed. Like, no, that's too much. So
yeah, there's a lot of fear around it. There can be. Like, yeah. Don't even go there. Don't even get that close to my periphery.
Or even
which I understand too.
Yeah, absolutely. And even the heartbreak, you know, just like, you know, I have buddy, he's just like, it's just breaking my heart, guys. And I get that. Like, you know, my teacher, Emoto Ma, you know, she says, you know, it's like, it's breaking my heart. And she's like, yeah, are you willing to let your heart break open a little more and a little more, a little more? You know, we think we're inching towards the edge, right? That's how I feel. It's like, as if there's an edge. It's all just this imagined thing that's going to occur. Like she yes. says, you know, there's, she goes, there's no feeling that can kill you. Those certain feelings, they seem so overwhelming. It's just like, how am I going to get through this? So.
Yeah, I like to think of fear as false evidence appearing real. Like, once you dive into it, it doesn't have that same hold on you. It's like, oh, it's just a thought. It's actually not that scary.
I'm writing that down. False evidence appearing real. I just yesterday was riddled with anxiety. I mean, it hasn't hit me this hard since 2012. I'm like, where did you come from? Well, first it just had me by the throat, you know? And then eventually I'm like, okay, hold on. And I realized I was living into an imagined future of things not going well in a certain area of my life. And when I woke up this morning, well, may I say, after hours of sitting like and not moving, I finally just had a moment. I was thinking this whole, for these hours, I should call a friend and break out of this. And, but I'm like, you know, all the stories, I wouldn't. And I had a moment and I hit call and my friend picked up and she and I spoke. And after we were done, I'm like, okay, I can actually pick my body up. I'm going to go do the dishes, right? Then I woke up this morning and I was like, you're imagining your future going a certain way. And it's scaring you. You know, fearing for false evidence appearing real, right? Like, I'm like, it's you know, and so many times in my life I've learned, like, when everything seems like my life's coming to an end, like, you know, what an example, like getting diagnosed with cancer and believing I'm going to die. Well, that didn't happen. And then my wife and I, we split up. And then now I'm raising this kid and I'm in the midst of chemo and I finally finished chemo. And I'm like, okay, now I have to work. Oh, and raise my kid. How am I going to do this? That's when the anxiety was terrible in 2012. Mm. And, you know, then this morning I'm like, yeah, you just made the whole thing up. my all my deepest, most transformative spiritual growth has been a result of just being with what's so and not living in an imagined future and allowing not knowing to be part of the experience. And then I recognize, and it's in my body, it's anxiety. So I grabbed my kettlebell and I did some legs, I did some single leg squats and like were brutal. And then I went to a hill a few blocks away and I'm trying to work on my knees. So I just did, you know, I walked backwards up the hill, but I walked down there and I walked backwards. You know, it's like got to get it out of my body. Otherwise I'm going to be like bouncing off the walls when I'm speaking to Tara.
Yeah. And you got it out.
And I got it out. But right. Yeah. But fear. It's just, it's powerful.
Yeah. It can really paralyze you. Yeah.
Yeah. And that really brings me to like 2019. Tara is referred to hospice. Like, holy shit. Well, we're recommending you to hospice. You're like, whoa, what?
Yeah. Like,
are you willing to speak about that?
Oh, sure. I'm an open book. Yeah, like I said, I had cancer throughout my body. I knew I was dying. I was losing weight. I wasn't well. I looked pale. I was walking with a cane because my hip was breaking. I was in pain. I was in a lot of pain because I had cancer in my spine too. Mm. I was coughing. I mean, it was no quality of life. It was like, well, why even live? So it was so beautiful to face death too in that way. And since then, since my best friend sadly died 6.5 years ago, I've had so many friends die from cancer and other reasons, and both my parents just died in the last 4 months. So I've had so much exposure to death, and I think it's a blessing really, because now I'm at the point of, you know, I'm actively choosing to live, and I continue to, and I want to live. I love my son and he's my root on this earth.
Mm.
But like, I'm not so afraid to die because I've seen so much death, and I know that I have this sense just from feeling my dear friends who've passed that it's just another realm and they feel free to me. And so it's been such a beautiful gift to get to the edge of death and to see my own death and see many other people's deaths to realize there's really nothing to be afraid of. So therefore, let's fully live. And that was something I learned with my best friend Deb when she was dying, that in order to fully live and embrace life, you have to embrace death. So I think that's such a profound gift us cancer thrivers are sitting with. And not everybody comes to this realization, of course, but as you said, it's an awakening and it pushes you to the edge to be like, oh wow, I could be dead in a year. And you know, for my diagnosis too, I'm doing really well, but I don't know how long I have. You know, I sadly see people around me in my same state who are not doing well or dying or have died. So it's always constant of like, wow, I just had another birthday in March. You know, I didn't even know if I'd make it to my birthday 2 years ago. So let's celebrate getting older. It's a privilege.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And yeah, to face death and, you know, I keep it in, keep it close to my heart, you know, keeping a little pocket right here. Just, you know, death's always there. Just
yes,
keeping me present to what matters to me. And I am so sorry for the loss of your parents. That's a pretty rapid time frame in which to lose them both.
Thank you. Yeah. It's something I'm integrating on a deep level right now. But thank you so much.
I'm sure you are. You're welcome. It's you spoke about, you know, the natural treatment you did. I also did a natural treatment for 10 months before doing traditional treatment. and I did something called Gerson therapy. And, you know, it's on all the quackery.com or whatever that's called, you know, websites. And okay, you know, it's fine. But, you know, I did my blood work and my scans and went through it. And I did it for 10 months until the tumor seemed to have grown into a nerve. It just really, the pain was too much. And it was my wife who had said to me, she's like, this is like the pain you're going through. I'm like, I can do this. She's like, you're breathing through pain like 5 times a day for an hour. Like, it's all you do. It's getting a bit much. I get right. So focused on things, so committed, you know, I'm just like, it's what I'm doing. And then I, you know, came to, and I was like, wow, you're right. And I went to chemo, radiation, and surgery, but I had seen the effect of chemo and radiation on people. And I was like, hell no. You know, I didn't want to do it. And then, you know, coming from the natural treatment world, you know, where there is as much positive and much positivity and affirmation as there is, there's also, there can be with some people a real negative attitude about traditional allopathic medicine. And the reality is, like, yeah, you know, chemo's poisonous. So is radiation. So are your scans you're getting. And right. Like, this is what we have right now. Like, there were people being gassed in, was like World War I, and then they found out that some of the people who were gassed like had their cancer like go away, and they were like, what? And so they found this terrible poison, they were able to use it to start treating people, and like it took I don't know how many people going through it before they were able to start refining it. Now, you know, now they're using biomarkers and science is just growing. So like, it was a real difficult thing though to go from the natural treatment to the traditional treatment, to allopathic medicine. I felt like I was betraying people, and you know, I'm like, well, why don't you worry about yourself, you know? But there was this, it was a whole process of like, you know, what I was committed to, how I wanted to heal, and when I wasn't able to do it that way, or when I chose to do it a different way because it wasn't working, it was that was a whole process. And I'm curious what your experience was transitioning from a natural treatment, a holistic treatment, to the traditional allopathic protocols.
Yeah, it was very similar to what you said. You nailed it. And I had the added component too. For 2.5 years, I was blogging, I was making videos, I was doing interviews saying chemo kills and do all natural. And so I had to really get humble and eat my words and be like, oh my gosh, you guys, I want to live, and I'm going to do this thing that I said I'd never do. And so it took a lot of inner shifting of my thoughts. And I actually worked with Bethany Webb, our mutual lovely friend.
Bethany, she was a guest. I fell in love with that girl. She's fantastic.
Bethany is amazing. I love her so much. Yeah, she wrote the book, My Guru Cancer, and she does the work of Byron Katie,
yeah,
where you ask yourself 4 questions and you examine your thoughts. So I did so much work with her to turn that thought around from chemo is poison to chemo is a healing nectar that will heal me. And I had to just switch my thoughts of when I went in there for treatment and wasn't feeling well, being like, okay, this is what gonna heal me. So yeah, it took a lot of inner work to shift my thinking around it, but I after some time I was able to do that. And it was almost like, I don't know if you know about homeopathic medicine, that the so the whole sense of the healing is in the poison, as it were. Not quite saying that right, but you know, the medicine that can harm you can actually heal you. So I thought of it like that, as like, okay, I have to go through the shadows again, going down into Inanna's realm, lose my hair, lose 20 pounds, almost die, but I will come out again. And I just held on to that belief system throughout, of like, I will be reborn. And a lot of people thought I wouldn't make it through it because I was so close to the edge, but thank goddess I did.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, it's like what you're speaking to, it's like snake venom. Like they use the venom to treat people who've been bitten. And there are so many medicines that are poison, but it's minute amounts. If you're doing homeopathy, it's, you know, there's some crazy stuff in homeopathic remedies, but it's such a tiny, tiny amount of a concentrated substance that your body can respond to it differently than if it would if it was a, say, a large amount. And we give people aspirin, we give them acetaminophen, which all can be really, really bad for you in large amount. It's, I feel like it's the same. It's there's a similarity. I don't know what it is, but it just popped into my head as you and I were speaking. Like, you know, as a kid, you know, I was dealt with some pretty traumatic stuff. And in my late 40s, working with a therapist, working with a practitioner, I discovered some of them had never been dealt with, and then found a therapist and just, you know, walked down into that, those caves, into those darker, deeper realms that were very scary to be in. Very scary. And stepping into those places, you know, is where we can find our freedom. But, you know, I have deep, you know, compassion and powerfully acknowledge folks who do that work, because it's not for the meek. Not for, no, the meek of hearts. So how did you meet Bethany, may I ask?
Yes, of course. How did I meet Bethany? I met Bethany years and years and years ago, probably 4 years ago or so, through this cancer journey on social media, basically. So basically we came into each other's spheres. I have a secret cancer group on Facebook that I believe you're part of, for people. It started out as for people healing cancer naturally. It was just that. And then when I started doing standard treatment, I opened it up. Obviously, it was like, oh, okay, let's open it up. And so it was interesting because I met Bethany through the work of Byron Katie. I took a class of hers, but there was always like a bit of a separation between us because she had chose more of the standard route, and I had a great amount of respect for her. But when I was at that point of facing my own death and realizing, okay, I need to do some work around this, I reached out to her, and she's been, oh my gosh, such a solid ally and dear, dear friend to help me see if, like, it's okay, Tara, you can do this, and it can help you thrive and grow. So yeah, we've become really, really close friends over the years, and I really can thank the fact that I'm alive to her. she's helped me live. So yay for Bethany.
Yeah, and absolutely. And as I was speaking of earlier, it's like, you know, as I'm sitting there with this anxiety in my body, it's like, you know, is it true? Is it really true that your future is going to go this way? It's like, no, I have no idea. Okay, so are you going to keep carrying that around?
Oh my gosh, yep.
And I met her because my former wife, she and I were chatting, and she was like, I think you would love to have Bethany on your podcast. I'm like, yeah. She's like, yeah. So we connected, and you know, they know each other through the work of Byron Katie.
I see.
Yeah. I don't really break down to, I don't go through the process yet. I don't go through the process yet, the Byron Katie process, but, you know, doing the work. But I do use those two questions, you know. Is it true? Is it really true?
Right. Yeah, it's so powerful to look at your thoughts like that and be like, oh, it's really just a thought. We don't know what's true or not. Could be.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, a huge percentage of our interactions and relationships are based on our imagination.
Exactly.
So the downside to that is like, oh my gosh, how much of my life is actually real? The upside to it is that we can actually distinguish what's real for ourselves and have some real freedom in how we go forward.
Exactly. Yeah, it can be liberating to grok that and really see, oh, okay, maybe these challenges are here to grow me in some way.
Yeah.
Let's be open to that concept.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot imagine a life where I'm not constantly searching for meaning. Like, when I imagine other people living their lives where they live, and I'm like, you know, not taking on projects and not doing, just I don't know what they're, you know, just it's all imagined, right? But it's like, just, you know, I always wonder, like, what's it like in their brain? Because I'm always like, just I'm constantly trying to figure out which irons I should pull out of the fire because there are too many.
You're an inspired being.
Yes, I am. Or crazy.
Yeah, I think they go hand in hand. Crazy and inspiring.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So it's been since 2020 that you just like, you've had fantastic results from the chemo and the radiation and different treatments.
And I want to add too that all throughout the standard treatment, I continue to do non-toxic natural medicine. You know, that's always been my path of like, let's keep building up the immune system. And I still do that to this day. And I get monthly shots for cancer treatment, hormone blocking shots. So I'm doing a integrative method right now. And I really believe in it because, as you know, there's these two different ways of being, you know, and I did Gerson for a while too. So I know what you're talking about of like, oh, you know, all natural or standard. And there's a lot of fear in between the two, but a lot of why I'm speaking out is to say, you know, integrative route really helps because there's these modern medicines that can really help us. Like it's helped you, it's helped me and Bethany and so many others. But then there's the natural treatments too, to keep your immune system strong while you are doing these medicines. So I really passionately believe in that, that there is a bridge between both worlds. And it's very important to have both sides, the oncologists and, you know, the naturopathic doctors and natural doctors, to see how they can connect. Yeah, so that's been a big wake up call for me.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I agree with you. You know, it's like someone I knew was doing, their friend was doing chemo and radiation or one or the other. And they said, you know, do you think Gerson would help? I'm like, well, they're getting, let's say it was chemo, they're getting chemo put into their body. If you did the Gerson protocol, you'd be detoxing and pulling that chemo back out again. Like you'd just be like back and forth. Like, you know, it's maybe you want to do the Gerson therapy after, but there are also supplemental parts of the Gerson therapy that would be of value to you.
Definitely. Yeah. But, like coffee enemas.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Those were what caused my discomfort and pain because I had rectal cancer.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, that's up to five of those. I'm sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yep. That would be a lot.
That was a lot. People are listening. And uncomfortable. Like, what the hell are you talking about? So for anyone who's listening, the purpose of the coffee enema is to, right? Like when everybody talks about it, I'm like, feel free to laugh, right? Because it's like, what are you doing? So the liver can only detoxify the body so fast. And there comes a point when we're detoxifying the body where the liver is maxed out. But when you do a coffee enema, the coffee goes into the large intestine. The large intestine does not absorb toxins, but it will allow the caffeine to travel into the bloodstream and speed up the rate at which the liver expels bile. To which people say, then why don't you just drink it instead of shoving it up your ass? And the reason is because if you drink it, you also drink the, quote, toxins. That may not be toxins to a person who is drinking it. Like, you know, I drink coffee, especially in allergy season. I love coffee because it reduces my allergies. It's fantastic like that. And if they're getting out of hand, I might have an extra cup. It's wonderful. But when you're going through a detox therapy, such as Gerson therapy, and you're drinking coffee, you're putting toxins into your body, things that occur as toxins when you're trying to clean out your system. So by doing it through an enema, the toxins stay out. Obviously, look at what the large intestine does. It's moving waste out of your body. No toxins enter the body, but the caffeine does and speeds up the rate at which the liver expels bile so you can increase the rate at which you detox.
Great explanation. People often ask me that, but do you have that down? Bravo.
I do.
You know your stuff.
They wanted to understand, like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? You know? And, yeah, if you drink more than 3 12-ounce carrot juices in a day, like your liver can't pull out as many toxins as that will. You know, proper fresh-made carrot juices. Drink more than 3.
Right.
If you do 3, you want to do a coffee enema.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so
put that coffee where the sun don't shine. I couldn't resist. I had to say that.
Please do. There was World War, I don't know if it was World War One or Two. Again, I don't remember stuff like that, but in Germany, when they were running out of morphine sometimes, and they're injured soldiers, and so they're using warm water enemas to reduce pain. And they did have coffee, and they would have leftover coffee. And so the nurses, some of the nurses, like, why don't we try putting this in there too? Well, it ended up reducing pain significantly.
Yes, yes. And I heard that.
Then as time went on, they discovered it had more effects. But anytime you're putting something up your butt, plenty of people are just like, no, that makes no sense. And to that response, I'll say, hey, I get it. It was a little bit uncomfortable for me. Same way my friend who just told me he's having a colonoscopy, I spoke to him today, and he's just, you know, he's making butt jokes because, like, that's what we do as adults, as children, you know, butts and farts. That's where silliness come from.
Exactly. Why not laugh about it, hey? Humor is good.
The humor is good. Absolutely.
But they used the coffee enemas in our whole medical, in the medical world to the 60s, too. I just wanted to add
that
it was used commonly. Yeah. It was really interesting. Like you said, it came from that war period, whatever, World War One, World War Two, and they used it all throughout the till the 60s. And then I think they realized, oh, they can't. I mean, this goes to another topic, but they can't make a lot of money off of it. So they stopped doing that. But yeah, it was a normal thing in our culture until the 60s.
Until the 60s. No kidding. I'm going to look into that. That's fascinating. I learned that homeopathy was a regular part of medicine in the 19th century, not like the 1800s. And then, like, there was progress being made with pharmaceuticals, and there was more money to be made with pharmaceuticals. And so homeopathy got pushed out and was, like, you know, they became a bad thing.
Yes. Right? Same with chiropractic care, too. Same with chiropractic care, too.
Oh, without a chiropractor? Oh, my gosh. Like, my chiropractor has been fantastic. I'm so grateful for chiropractic care.
Mm-hmm.
It's
good.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, there's this whole dance of politics and money that I don't understand it. I go by what works, what feels right, do my research, you know. And do my best, and here we are.
Yeah. Hey, you're doing something right. You're here. So am I. I'm here too.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So you currently, the only treatment you're doing now is the hormone blocking shot?
Yes, I do that once a month. It's called Falzodex. I also do Xgeva. It's for my bones. I was doing that once a month. Up until recently, now I do it once every 3 months, and I continue on. I do vitamin and mineral IVs once or twice a week. That's for the natural treatment. And yeah, I do a whole plethora of things just to make sure my body stays healthy for the whole natural side of things. I eat well. I don't eat sugar, gluten-free, organic. Yeah, lots of vitamins.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a whole protocol I do.
There, I'm with you as far as like my diet, and I did a what's that called? You do 30 days clean eating and then try a new food every few days. I'm not sure. I'll think of it in a second. It's called it's a diet where you pull a whole bunch of food out of your diet for 30 days, and then you eat one of those foods and see how it affects you. Your system is clean. You're on a super clean diet. And then doing that, I was able to discover what foods affect me and what don't. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, for instance, some foods are they have amines in them that are vasoactive. You know, I think histamines. There's amines in certain foods causes me to get a headache. And so I discovered that coffee has it in them. So does black tea. So does any kind of tea. And I can very sensitive to that. So I took black tea out of my diet and any green or white teas. That way I can drink coffee. But like coffee is the one drug that I do. And I love it. So I'm like, okay, so like raisins does that to me. Dates do it to me. Tea does it to me. And find the different foods that don't work for my body. Because I figure like, it's not just the headache. It's that it's like, it's if my body's not responding well to the food, it's going to affect me in many other ways, you know? And then like one day I took grain out of my diet. And like, it was unreal how much my life changed when I took grain out of my diet. I'm like, dude, I'm not giving up bread with some butter on it. Like, are you out of your mind? Or like a, you know, bowl of oatmeal or something delicious. But when I took it away from out of my diet and then realized how much better I felt, I was like, you know, like I was dealing with this constant headache, this migraine that would come every morning if I didn't get a cup of coffee and some food in me first thing in the morning. And I was like chasing this carrot. And finally, I was like, no, no more. So now I eat super clean. I have my little drug, my coffee, and take vitamins and minerals. But I'm curious, or so I just want to say that it's wonderful to find balance with food, to recognize the power of food. And
yes.
And also that the money-making aspects of farming has resulted in food changing a lot. Mm-hmm, and, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not part of the tinfoil hat brigade. I'm not under the, you know, like, you know, just wacky thinking and assuming that, like, you know, some conspiracy's happening. I'm like, no, like when it came to wheat, like what was discovered was you can make a short wheat plant that doesn't get blown over very easy in the wind. It produces way more berries. Are they called berries?
Yes, I think so.
And then they're able to get more wheat per acre. Just fantastic. What they didn't realize in this process that the amount of gluten in the wheat shot through the roof.
Right.
And now people are responding to it. And folks say, like, if you go to Italy, go to Europe, and there's certain place where you eat the wheat there, it's a different response. So, like, you know, my whole point,
yes.
Like, as we're learning about food and we discover what affects our body, it just can change the way we live. It's called an elimination diet. That's what's
yes.
Eliminate everything under the sun and then slowly incorporate different foods. You get to discover what works for you. But I don't think I've ever done a vitamin or mineral IV. I'm curious about those.
Yeah, it's a drip IV. There's a needle that goes into my arm, or you could use your port if you have one. And it just, you can do high dose vitamin C. You can do anything really. You know, and again, I'm not a doctor, so I can't go full on into that. But I learned that like a general vitamin and mineral IV just really helps me. And so I do that once or twice a week. I've done them for years and I'm doing really well. So, hey, why not? It works. It's definitely, you know, on the alternative realm of things, naturopathic doctors do it. So, it's might be a little tricky to find somebody depending on where someone lives, but there are people around who do it. Yes.
Yeah, here in Ithaca, New York, I'm sure there's probably a few people who do it.
Yes, I'm sure.
And just so you know, at the end of this podcast, every episode, there's a disclaimer at the end saying, like, you know, we're not doctors. We're only speaking from our experience, and this is not medical advice in any way.
That's good.
Yeah, I love just having the guest. You speak from your experience, and that's
right.
It.
And that's important to say that when it comes to health.
I'm not telling anybody what to do. I have no business.
Smart.
I don't.
So do you eat a gluten-free diet now?
Yeah. I don't.
When you said grain-free?
I don't eat any grain. I don't eat rice, oats.
Okay.
You name it. Like if it's a grain, corn, I don't eat it. Now I will have a cheat day. Like, I'll get some organic beef and my son and I will have burgers and I'll eat it on a bun because it's absolutely delicious.
Okay.
But that means that if it's allergy season, I'm going to have allergies the next day.
Gotcha.
And like, you know, I don't have sugar in my diet. I buy, you know, from the perimeter of the store, you know, like I buy whole foods and I cook them. I don't eat much in the way of processed food. I mean, and if I decide, okay, this cheat day, I'm going to have a little sugar. I know that if it's allergy season, I'm going to feel it the next day. And if I start getting a little too creative and cheat with grain too much, my blood sugar starts crashing the next time I'm hungry.
Right.
I'll be like, I'm the person who for most of my life when I was hungry, I would be shaking, trembling from being hungry and like kind of feel like this cold, this icy hot shiver that was part of hunger. And I'd be miserable when I was hungry and I couldn't function. And then took sugar out of my diet. That made a huge difference, right? But then like a couple of years ago, I took grain out of my diet and was just like, oh my gosh, this is what hunger feels like for a regular person. A regular person, like that's kind of absurd. There goes the imagination again, right? But like just entertaining for a moment, like this is what hunger feels like for a regular person. It's like, it's just a hunger. You don't feel like you're dying, that there's an earthquake happening inside of you.
Right, right.
So this dropping of the blood sugar ended and now I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm in heaven.
That's I did a ketogenic diet for about a year until I published my book and my mom was getting sick. So I kind of got thrown off, but keto is high fat and protein, but no grains. And that's really excellent if you are on a cancer journey, because the grains ultimately it turns into sugar and sugar feeds cancer. So there's a whole science behind that. That's pretty amazing to look at.
So you're getting energy from burning fat, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard about
your body switches from burning carbs to burning fat. And I remember when I was transitioning to that, it was an interesting week or two where I could feel my body transitioning to this sense of, okay, like my body's orientating itself in a new way.
Yeah. What an interesting experience that must have been.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say my carbohydrates come from like yams, sweet potatoes, squash.
Right. And fruit. Right.
Right. So I'm getting carbohydrates that way.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference. I've never jumped into keto. It's just, I do eat meat, but I was like, wow, that's like a lot of meat. But you know, like you said, like if you're dealing with cancer and a treatment, there may be,
well, it's actually more fat really than meat. Oh, there is meat.
Doesn't have to be meat fat. It can just be fat in general.
Like oils. It's more like avocado, macadamia nuts. Oh. Like it's a whole science behind it. And then I had the app and I had to record like, well, what am I eating here and here and here? Cause even, you know, vegetables turns into carbs.
Mm-hmm.
Fruit turns into carbs, turns into sugar. So it's very minimal fruit. But yeah, more like high fat food.
Gotcha. Right. So I know of some people who did the meat version and I appreciate your clarification. Like, yeah, like it doesn't, could you be like vegetarian and do the ketogenic diet?
Yeah, you can. You have to just be a little bit more careful with your protein intake, but it's not like people think keto, like you're eating all meat. It's not that. I mean, yeah, you're eating some, but it's more of like the fat is the dominant part of it.
Imagine Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble just eating huge steaks. That's it. That's dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a different diet.
Right. There's the carnivore diet. That's a different one as well. Oh my goodness. So
exactly.
You were saying that you kept a blog for a while.
Yeah, I still have one. I have a site, cancerwarrioress.com, and there's links to all my videos there. And I have resource pages. And yeah, I have a blog. So I started blogging very similar to you right after I was diagnosed, just to share my journey. And, you know, a lot of the times I share on social, I do share daily on social media, I should say, primarily Instagram on my Tara Coyote page. But I will take certain pieces that I write and I'll put it on my blog. Yes. So yeah, if you go to cancerwarrioress.com, you can see the blog part and there's posts going back for the last 5.5 years.
Cancerawareness.com?
No, Cancer Warrioress.
Warrioress.
Like what? Warrior with an S.
Warriors.
Warrior, like Warrioress. Warrioress, like okay, the female version. That was my little creation.
Beautiful. And what did I name mine? Mine was Where I Am in All of This.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is crazy. What is happening? My son had just been born. He was 4 months old and I was diagnosed.
Oh my gosh, he's so young.
My stepson was 9. Yeah, so it was just like, you know, what the hell is happening? You know, that moment where, I don't know for you, but for me, it was like, I'm not one of those people. You know, those people, sickly people, people who don't look good. There's something wrong, you know, they have, you know, visual, you know, it's, you know, issues that just, something tells you there's something wrong with them. You're like, not wrong with them. God, that sounds so terrible. But you get what I'm saying. Like, you know, there's something unhealthy about their life. And it must be genetic and all this and that. You know, just making up, again, the imagination, making up nonsense. And then you get diagnosed and you go, oh, lots of people who are just happily trucking through life suddenly get diagnosed. And there's no, like, it's not preceded by years of lack of health and doctor's appointments. It's completely healthy people. And
yeah,
you know, that's not news to anybody who's been diagnosed, but it was for me back then. And you know, feeling so lost, like my world had just changed so drastically.
It was like that for me too, and my friends were stunned. Same thing for my friend Deb. You know, we ate organic and natural and lived a healthy lifestyle, but still, you know, the sad part of our reality is there's toxins everywhere. Even if you eat the healthiest diet, you know, we're still exposed to it. And then there's the trauma. There's so many parts to it that's beyond just, you know, eating badly, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many ways that it can arise and that our health can be impacted. It's not just what you put in your body and how healthy you look on the outside.
Yes, yes. How you process your emotions, your relationships, your stress level.
Yeah, that was
plays a part.
Transformative for me when I got diagnosed. At first I was like, you know, okay, I've got to change my diet. Oh my gosh. Like the day after, my wife goes to work, kids go to school, takes the baby with her to work, and talking to a friend, he's claiming he can cure me if I want him to. That quickly was off the table about as fast as he said it. But in the process, he's talking about, you know, eating healthy food, eating lots of greens and smoothies. And so, like, I went to the store and I bought kale. And I'm like, how the hell did I make it? I don't know about a kale smoothie. It was like 2007, you know, barely had any internet. And if we did, I was too out of my mind to look. And so I took a smoothie and I took the blender, kale and a bunch of water and just blended it and drank it. I was like, what do I do? Die. Blah, 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 blah. Like one of the grossest things I've ever drank.
Sounds like it. Yeah. But might have been good to have like a little bit of apple in there or something else.
Anything else, right? Like a little bit of apple, maybe a little bit of lemon to get rid of that chlorophyll flavor.
Did you drink it?
I did. I drank the whole thing. And the more greens I drank and ate, the more the rectal tumor was irritated by all that roughage.
Mm. Oh, yes. Yes. I could see that.
Yeah. Like I started seeing the pattern, and I'm really bad at seeing patterns in what I eat and how it affects me. Like I've gotten a lot better at it, but back then I was super terrible at it. And even then I'm like, okay, you know, I'm eating like beans, rice, and lots of greens, and all of a sudden, like the next day, I'm like, you know, not in pain, just like very uncomfortable, feeling intense discomfort, and noticing, like, okay, I'm moving my bowels, and like this, and I'm really uncomfortable for the next 30 minutes. I'm like, yep. So, right, that's really interesting, right? It's like an exposed tumor.
Right, right.
And every time the bowels move, if it's rectal cancer, like you're experiencing it. It was an interesting moment when I was like, I am intimately acquainted with this tumor in a way that would have never crossed my mind prior.
Yeah, I bet.
Couldn't ever have it just like, you know, when the cancer metastasized to my liver in 2011, when I didn't feel a thing, And there was no, nothing in my life changed other than I was getting my routine scans and they were like, whoops, flip on the radar. Better check this out, you know?
Right.
You were healthy. And they're like, what? I have, you know, you had the lump in your breast.
Yeah. But it's the same with breast cancer. You don't know. That's like, it doesn't really affect you until it goes beyond the breast, like it did with me. And so, yeah, it's interesting how these different cancers affect the body.
Yeah. And they just seem to come from anywhere and everywhere. My uncle was a vegan for most of his life, macrobiotic for a huge part of his life. And he got diagnosed with bile duct cancer.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's what? Like, he did all the right things. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
Mm.
It does not discriminate, that's for sure.
No, it does not. It does not. So tell everyone about your book, Great Grace, Grit, and Gratitude. And what's this subtitle?
Grace, Grit, and Gratitude, a Cancer Thriver's Journey from Hospice to Full Recovery with the Healing Power of Horses. Yes, so my book, it's a compilation of 6.5 years of writing. After my best friend Deb died, I was just so torn apart by grief. So I started writing a lot. I loved writing when I was a, you know, young adult and up into my early 20s. And I ended up having my son at a young age and jumped into single motherhood. So I forgot about writing. But when my best friend died, I started pouring a lot of my emotions into my writing and sharing them on social media and such. So by the time the pandemic hit, which is when I had finished treatment in March of 2020, I had tons of writing from all that time period. And it was, you know, quarantine time where we basically weren't doing much and staying home. I lived on a tiny island in the middle of the ocean, you know, very secluded. I thought, okay, you know what? This is time I'm going to write my book, because so many people had said to me, because I've been sharing my writing, like, Tara, when are you going to write your book? And so I spent about 15 months working on it every day. It was so much hard work, just took a lot of fortitude and discipline just to put all the writing together and edit it and put it in a format where I hoped would hold people's attention. And then there's, you know, the whole process of publishing it. I self-published it. So it was a lot. It was a lot of work. But I published it in August of 2021. And it's been a bestseller on Amazon in 8 different categories. And it's done really well. It sold like about around 2,000 copies. And yeah, it's super psyched. It's helping people, which is great, because that was my whole objective of like, okay, you know, if it can help one person, then that's great. So yeah, and my whole story in it is, of course, my health journey and what happened with my friend Deb, but I run the theme through it, how horses are incredibly healing forces. So that's part of my mission too, is just to help share the news of how incredibly healing horses are.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love the approach you took to writing it. And I've seen your social media posts with horses that you clearly love. And you still work with horses. Yeah, like I've seen, there's like horses in the neighborhood, right?
Oh, I have 2 horses. I had 4 horses when I owned my retreat center, but when I moved back home to Kauai, I passed on 2 of them to a lovely woman, and I took 2 here.
How does one?
So yeah, they're still part of my life. Wow, I love them so much.
Beautiful, I bet. I mean, I haven't spent much time on horses, but when I'm near them, they're so majestic, and there's so much personality there. They're just. It's a whole area of my life that it's uninvestigated, you know what I'm trying to say. But they just, they're incredible creatures, just from my very ignorant perspective. I have to ask you, how does one get their horses from U.S. to Hawaii? I imagine on a boat, yeah?
Yeah, it was a pretty epic journey. Well, you can actually fly horses too. My boys, they went on a boat. It was about a 3 week journey from, traveling to where they had to go. They have to get certain immunizations to get into Hawaii, and then they're on, a boat for 7 days or so altogether. Yeah, it was a long journey for those guys. So when they arrived here, they were very happy to see the ground again and
Oh,
promptly rolled.
they probably rolled.
Yeah. They were
Oh,
like, let me feel the dirt. Let me get my beautiful coat all dirty.
I bet, like, wholly ungrounded to be on water for 3 weeks.
Yeah. So yeah, they're a big part of my healing and staying healthy and just staying happy. I feel like animals are such powerful healers.
Yeah, I don't have any animals other than my aquarium full of tropical fish. And
Nice.
we had, yeah, I do love it. It's a beautiful part of my home. And there's, plants living in the aquarium, and it's just like it's this little ecosystem. And, we had two dogs when I was diagnosed, and the golden retriever was just too much to care for, so we found him a new home. That was really difficult. Now my son's mom has couple dogs, and her husband has a couple dogs, but her two little dogs I just adore. I'll house sit for them and just have those sweet little creatures. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I would love to have animals in my home again, but my lifestyle doesn't really allow for me to be home for the amount of time that I would feel comfortable with. They might be able to. They might be okay with it, you know what I mean? They might be able to, just wait before I let them out, just go to the bathroom outside, for 8 hours or whatever. But I'm just like, man, I just for the time that I can be away, there's times I'm just like, I'm just the kind of person. It's like, okay, let's go. I'm leaving tomorrow at 10 a.m. I'll be back at 10 at night, or I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna go visit this person. And it's just like,
Gotcha.
so right now there's no animals. I imagine at some point there will be. Thought I heard a chicken in the background earlier.
Yeah, I live on Kauai and there's chickens that are loose everywhere. They're not necessarily my pets, but they just roam freely. They're wild chickens.
Are they
so it's the
friendly?
backdrop of my life.
Nice. Are they friendly? I mean, chickens seem to be a little bit skittish from people to begin with, but.
Yeah, I mean they'll come within a few feet of you. They like to steal the horse food, so yeah, they're very entertaining. I have three cats, one dog, two horses. Lots of chickens loose, so it's a wild jungle here.
Oh, it sounds great. I've never been. Sounds wonderful, though. Oh, my goodness. So, where can people find grace, grit, and gratitude? They find it on Amazon.
Yeah, it's online and Amazon. They could order the print version, and then there's the ebook or the Kindle version. They can order it online through Barnes and Noble. Like I said, it'll be coming out hopefully in audiobook soon. It's in various bookstores in Northern California and obviously in Hawaii. But yeah, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. It's there. You can find it.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
It's fantastic that you did it, and I look forward to listening to it once you get
Thank
it out
you.
there. Oh, I definitely will. And is there anything
Yeah,
else?
audiobooks are quite the hot thing these days.
Yeah,
A lot of people are into them.
yeah, 'cause it changed our world, like. They've been around for a long time, right? You can go to the library and get them on CDs. A lot of folks kind of, they knew there was cassette tapes before that, a billion cassette tapes for one book, right? But now you can
Right.
just download it onto your phone and listen in your car while you're driving.
Yeah,
Or if
it's
the work,
incredible.
you're outside, gardening, you want to listen to your book or going for a walk. It's just like it's changed everything. And it's made so much more information accessible to people.
Very
Like
true.
podcasts, right? Yeah, like just like it's so cool right now. Like there's so much to listen to, and listening, as long as it's not requiring your eyes, you can
Right.
pay attention to certain things that you're doing. not be distracted.
Yeah, well said. Well said.
Was there anything else you want to leave people with?
I guess for those who are still listening and are having a challenging time, whether it be on a cancer journey or challenging life circumstances, I always like to encourage people just to keep going, keep the faith, and you are so much stronger than you think you are. I feel like we're incredible beings with such limitless potential, and it's just really tapping into it and knowing that you have the ability to get through anything and to surrender into the experience too, and to find the beauty and the joy. That's always my mission when there's hard things going. It's like, okay, so this is really hard. How can I find something inspiring and beautiful in it? And it's usually always there, even in the most tragic circumstances. Nah. And humor too. Keep laughing if you can, because there's always something to laugh at.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When the pandemic kind of took another dive, as we have these phases of variants, right? One point I'm like, okay, that's it. And every morning when I woke up, the first thing I do is go to YouTube and put on a comedian. And
smart,
just
smart.
Laugh my ass off. I'm like, I want to wake up and laugh.
Yeah.
And all the tension of how life has been, there's a whole lot to release, you know?
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah. And yes.
Yeah. You can always find something humorous, even in the most dire circumstance.
Oh, goodness, the jokes I've made about cancer and treatment. Like, that's why this podcast is called But Seriously, aside from the fact that I have cancer. Just because, like, we can start laughing so hard about the cancer stuff, and then it's just like, all right, but seriously, let's actually have a conversation.
No, I love that. I read that before, and I think it's hilarious. Good for you.
We are so much stronger than we are, you know? Like, people say, I don't know how you did it. I don't know how I would deal with it. And I'm like, I don't know either, but if you're asking me, I would imagine you'll deal with it the same way you deal with everything else in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're put to the test, really, it's sink or swim. And what are you going to choose to do? Are you going to make a beautiful opportunity out of it, or are you going to just be angry and upset? So it's really a choice. And if you're the type of person to find the beauty of it, those of us to do it, we tend to do better because we're running that energetic line of positivity through our body rather than like the negativity that can be very draining and depressing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I love that you are always finding the positive opportunities available, because that resonates with me so much, because that's me.
So. Yeah.
I think sometimes to an annoying fault. I've had friends tell me before. I had one buddy. He's like, look, Bert, there's no silver lining in this one. Okay. This stinks. I don't remember what the topic was even about. And I stopped and I go, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And it's good to acknowledge that too. Like, I'm not saying to spiritually bypass an experience, like get what you need to. And if you're angry or frustrated, because that has its value too. But then to move on and find the beauty, that's a lot of what the horse work is like to really look at your emotions and get what you're supposed to out of it, and then metaphorically go back to grazing, like live your life again. Don't let it pull you down.
Can you say more about that?
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's part of the horse work I teach that I learned from my dear teacher, Linda Kohanoff. Part of the work we teach is about emotions. Emotions are here to teach us information. So for example, grief, it's an emotion I know quite a lot about because there's been a lot of loss, and I used to do grief rituals with my horses. So grief has the message that there's a loss that's occurred beyond your control. So basically, you know, somebody's died, there's been a fire, it's burned your house down, you've lost your job, you know, somebody's left you in a relationship, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of grief. It's emotions that need to be attended to. There's a loss. There's been a death of some kind. And so the message behind it is to release it, you know, celebrate. Like, my dad just died this week, sadly. So like, celebrate my dad's life, grieve, mourn, cry, whatever it may need to be, create altars for him, which I have done. and then release the emotion, release the grief, and then go back to joy, like go back to grazing, as I was saying, go back to your life. You know, like every emotion is an opportunity and a message to learn and grow. We're not meant to be stuck in emotions for days or weeks or months or years on end. It's emotions are meant to be temporary.
Yeah, and then go back to grazing. Yeah, and they show up in our bodies. I was working with a somatic sex educator. I met her, and I'm like, I need to work with her. And I'm like, why? I don't know. I just had to. And then it further revealed itself and brought me back to trauma from my childhood. But working with her, she was like, okay. I was on the phone with her one time. She's like, okay, so right now, what's going on with your body? And I explained to her. She was okay. I want you to jump up and down and move it out of your body. She goes, do you know that, like, you ever see a dog when they get startled, the first thing they do is they shake it all off. Or when they wake up, they shake it all off because they're getting it out of their body. They're moving it out.
And right.
We can keep things bottled up.
Oh my gosh,
and
yes.
And not express it. And I'm a huge advocate for expressing our emotion, you know, in a safe and respectable way, you know, like let it pour out, let it rip, because A, to move it through you, B, because it can reveal. And once you just really move it through us.
Yeah, you got to get it out. You have to, or else it will get stuck.
Yeah, I mean, fake it till you make it works in some areas of life. I do not recommend that as far as, you know, emotional struggle.
yeah. No, I know. It's so true.
Mm.
It's a hard one. It takes a lot of courage to face your emotions and do the work, like you were saying earlier, the shadow work. But it's so essential for healing and really living.
Yeah, I was a person who, you know, went through a trauma and froze as a kid, and then going throughout my adult life, anytime I would freeze in a situation, like an intense situation, I was deeply ashamed. And
right.
It owned me. It wasn't until I worked with my therapist and I was like, oh, I hate the part of myself that froze when I was a kid. And after doing the work, I realized I didn't really freeze. I actually spoke up and, like, you know, addressed the situation. But in my mind, I didn't kick, bite, scream, and stop this person from hurting me, you know? So, like, I imagined, you know, it changed kind of my reality, and then just, like, spent my life being someone who was deeply ashamed of freezing. And, like, now that I can own, yeah, sometimes I freeze. Holy cow. It's changed my life.
Right.
When I go fishing with my son, sometimes he'll catch it. If he's doing something that I think should be done differently, now he's a fantastic fisherman, doesn't need my help. But in the past, when I was teaching him, instead of saying what I wanted to say, I would just raise my voice and kind of panic and freak out because I can't get the words out. And he's, you know, he and I both agree, like, that's really useful. But at one point, I was finally able to say to him, like, hey, kiddo, so you know that thing that I do? He goes, and I, like I just said to you, he's like, yeah. Like, that's basically me, you know, fight, flight, or freeze. That's basically me freezing.
Mm-hmm,
and that's part of me being your dad. Sometimes I'm going to freeze.
Right.
And you're welcome to point it out when it's happening, and he has, and it makes a huge difference. And, you know, it's just, it's part of who I am. And, like, but I was so deeply ashamed of it that it just had the reins on me. And it's so liberating when we go to those dark places. Like, I felt like I was just, like, in this dark basement with no way out. You know what I mean? It was so scary to go back into my past, but now I'm free in that area of my life.
Bravo.
Yeah. And it's wonderful. So it's hard work. It's worth it. You know, Martine Prechtel?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I have one of his grief books.
I started getting through.
I love
one
his work.
Them. And there were no audiobooks. I never got through the grief book, but I love that 3-part video he has on YouTube that somebody posted.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's called Grief and Praise.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. You've heard about that.
I've heard of that. Yes.
When you praise what you've lost, it's called grief. And when you grieve what you have, it's called praise.
I love that.
Yeah. How can you not be grieving when you're present to someone you just love and adore?
Oh my gosh.
Because life is not permanent.
Certainly is not. We're just passing through.
You do not know. You do not know how long you're going to be here, and you cannot predict how it's going to go.
That's for sure.
Living in that kind of uncertainty, you know, like there it is. There's the cancer diagnosis. Living in such profound uncertainty. It's like newsflash. Not much has changed, except that the illusion of immortality is shattered.
Right.
The illusion of life going a certain way has been shattered. And you come to realize, like, life happens on life's terms, and we're just going for the ride.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And once you recognize, okay, you're going to live in uncertainty. I mean, there's more than one, what a terrible phrase. I was about to say there's more than one way to skin a cat. Like, what a rotten thing to say. But we're all familiar with that one. It's your cat just cringed. Your cat was like, what did he just, you know, but
how dare you say that?
Exactly. But yeah, it's that there is no certainty. And I felt like getting diagnosed with cancer had me recognize that. It didn't change this. I mean, certainly, yes, it was in the immediate. I was like, wow, like this could be rather far sooner than I'd expected. But it had me realize, yeah, you and everybody else for the rest of your life.
Right, like, right. It just woke you up to that reality of how impermanent life is.
Yes, now you got the big picture. So what are you going to do with it?
Exactly.
Oh.
Now you're awake.
Well, I've loved talking with you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you. It's such an honor. So glad we could chat.
Yeah, and we finally met for the first time.
I know. It's been like 9 months, I think, of trying to make it happen.
Yeah, Larry introduced us a while ago. He's such a great guy like that. He's like, Tara, this is Bert. Bert, this is Tara. You two should meet. He's done that with other friends where he's just like, I think you two should meet.
Oh, that's great.
He's really good about pulling people together.
Nice.
He's a real good fella. Yeah. So thank you and have a beautiful day.
Okay, thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in. I truly hope this podcast was of value to you. Please subscribe and let your friends and family know they can find But Seriously, the Cancer Podcast anywhere podcasts are made available. To learn more about my cancer survivorship coaching, please go to BertScholl.com. That's BERTSCHOLL.com. If you'd like to support But Seriously, the Cancer Podcast, please go to our Patreon page at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/ But Seriously, the Cancer Podcast. Brought to you in part by the Cancer Resource Center of the Fearlicks, right here in Ithaca, New York. Learn more at crcfl.net, because no one should face cancer alone. See you all in the next episode, and thank you so much for listening. The intro and outro music you hear is the creation of Saint Kid. You can find him on social media as The Saint Kid. The purpose of this podcast is to provide a platform for individuals to discuss personal experiences with a medical diagnosis. The host and guests are not medical professionals, and the podcast is not intended to provide medical advice or psychological therapy. Whenever there is a concern about mental or physical health, please consult a qualified medical professional.